And that's when also she started taking photos and creating banners, calling me an escort, and would create a banner, you know, like a kind of an escort type advertisement, but with my face on there, this risky picture I took, and then send it to my friends. She'd go through my Facebook list. And a lot of times she did target men, and they'd be like, hey, Francesca, just heads up, this person's kind of weird, but they sent me this. And I just was, it still just makes me sick. It still turns my stomach. And it was just, they enjoy humiliating me.
I'm Jamie Beebe.
And I'm Jake Deptula. On today's episode of Strictly Stalking, we're chatting with Francesca, who's been cyber-stalked for almost 20 years.
As a former bikini model, Francesca gained international recognition through televised events, competitions, and photos.
As her fame grew, an obsessed fan pretended to be Francesca to acquire explicit photos from one of her photographers.
The stalker then leaked the nude photos and videos to porn websites. He also created fake social media profiles and sent the photos and videos to Francesca's family and friends.
She filed a police report against the photographer who sold her stalker the videos, but they told her this was out of their jurisdiction and refused to help.
Looking for someone to assist her, she connected with Joey Ortega, a cyber-stalking consultant who's also here with us today.
Francesca and Joey, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Of course. Why don't we start with you, Francesca? When did you begin modeling?
I began modeling in 2006. I just started off going to a few bikini competitions with friends, and through the restaurant I worked at Hooters, they had a bikini contest and I tended to do well. And from there, I met some of the photographers that would frequent the restaurant, and the girls were telling me what great photos they got, and kind of started there. I started just working with kind of amateur photographers, getting pictures, and the feedback was very positive. And so then I decided I wanted to promote myself from there. At that time, there were a lot of websites like Model Mayhem and sites that were connecting models and photographers, but it was all really kind of on an amateur level. A lot of the people didn't have agents, and it really didn't protect the models. I mean, you're meeting this person just because they have a profile and some reviews, but you're showing up at their house or their studio to get these photos. So I know now, looking at it, it's very foolish and not a smart thing to do for my safety. But at the time, I was very trusting and excited. And so, yeah, a lot of them were websites. And then some of them were directly through photographers I had met at the restaurant or through other models that competed with me, kind of word of mouth. And so that was also another avenue that I connected with photographers.
Did you ever feel unsafe meeting any of these photographers?
You know, I didn't, which is completely crazy to me. The only time that it really started to dawn on me was a friend of mine was like asking me a lot of questions about this photo shoot. And I realized I didn't have a lot of the answers. And I felt, you know, like, wait a minute, what am I doing? What if this person is somebody who is deranged? Are they even a photographer? And so I remember I did cancel that photo shoot. And from there, you know, my friend helped me kind of to smarten up and start really asking more questions and doing my research on the people that I worked with. Once I started building up my portfolio, I decided I was going to start charging photographers that wanted to work with me, which still did not bring the best group of photographers. But secondly, I decided I was going to work for businesses, swimwear modeling, catalogs. So around that time that I started building up my profile, I also had continued doing these bikini competitions. And so I was competing in Hawaiian Tropic, and I began traveling a lot with Hawaiian Tropic doing that. And then I also participated, and this was around 2006, in a swimwear model competition through Eugenia Swimwear. And that was in Mexico, as well as Spain later on. But so that's kind of what it led to. Those pictures, self-promotion, networking, and then I just started kind of diving into that world and traveling.
During that time, what was social media like, and what was it like for models like yourself who were trying to get work, trying to build a fan base, and, you know, what kind of engagement did you have with people on those sites?
So this was back in the day with Skype and with MySpace. And so initially, I started kind of ramping up my modeling and doing some events, traveling. So that was like 2006, 2007. And I had fans contact me via email or via instant messenger. So I had one particular French girl who was studying design in Paris. This person just was like, hey, I built the MySpace for Amber. And this was a fellow model friend of mine. And she did a great job. And so I was like, wow. And she's like, hey, I would love to build that for you. This will help promote you. And so I was sharing willingly in the beginning, sharing photos that I thought were good enough to be featured on my MySpace. She completely had it done up, gaining lots of followers. So that's kind of what it looked like at the time initially. And then it evolved where MySpace was phasing out. And she's like, I'm going to start your Facebook now. But by the time she started my Facebook is when things started getting very tense. And I traveled to Paris in 2008, and she said she was out of town. And then she said her Skype camera was broken on her computer. She couldn't do that. And then at that point, that's when I started backing up. And I knew that there was a possibility maybe this isn't some French design girl, but it really started to become very apparent because I was so busy. I was traveling. It wasn't important to me at that point to find out who, because I thought, oh, I'm sharing nice pictures. I could get anywhere. But then it got twisted up. Where I was like, wait a minute, this person is now posting pictures that I would never say were okay to post. They're not asking my permission anymore. It kind of took a life of its own.
How often were you talking to this person in France when they were building these sites for you?
I would say maybe once or twice a week. And it was via instant messenger. And I'd studied French, so sometimes they would type in French. But of course, my French at that point wasn't good enough to know whether it was native or a really bad Google Translate. But yeah, so I was talking fairly regularly, and then I'd be like, oh, I'm out of town. And then I might not talk to them for like a week and a half or 2 weeks. So there was definitely a relationship forming there.
Were there any red flags that you saw in this relationship or within this person?
That's a good question. So yes. I noticed that she was very flirtatious with me and very overly complimentary. And I remember noticing it and being like, okay, that's kind of interesting. Maybe this isn't this young girl, but she could be possibly bisexual. I just kind of left it alone because she was doing a great job with the MySpace page at the time. But she would also get very pushy for photos and she wanted to know everything about me. So the red flag, so that was kind of getting weird. Then with her saying, oh, my Skype camera's broken. Oh, I can't meet you in Paris. Yet I was her inspiration for her design school. So a few things was like, okay, they clearly don't want me to really see them. They can't have a conversation with me on the phone. Who am I really dealing with? So I kind of started backing off a bit and I contacted Amber and I said, hey, Amber, this French girl, I noticed she had built your MySpace profile. And what's her deal? How do you know her? Because Amber and I had worked at Eugenia in 2006 at the same time. So that was a connection there. And she said, I don't talk to her anymore. They're not who they say they are. They're totally weird. I've completely nixed them. They're, you know, this person's out. And I thought it was weird because she used to be like Amber all the time. And then it was kind of like, oh, you don't hear anything. We're not seeing anything. The French girl hadn't really been actively helping her. So yeah, I mean, there were definitely some flags. So at that point, when Amber told me that this person's weird, I don't want them helping me anymore. I even then was even more backing off. But at that point, French girl started getting mad. She's like, why aren't you talking to me? I want more photos for this collection. I'm trying to build your page. And that's when I essentially looked on the page she had built for me on Facebook, and it was all these outtakes. Like, my eyes are shut, I'm blinking, they were unflattering, they were horrible pictures. Here I sent her the best, and I'm thinking, where did she get all these pictures? Well, come to find out, she always wanted to know all the stuff about me, and oh, who's this photographer, and asking so many questions. Well, me, naively, oh, I worked with so-and-so at that shoot, oh, this was taken there. And little did I know, she's building this collection. And she contacted those people pretending to be me. And then it started coming back where photographers were like, hey, check out this message I got. Is this from you? And it was that same type of writing, like where the English language is not their first language. A few photographers who really knew me were like, hey, this person's trying to get pictures of you. They're pretending to be you. And they say they want the naughtiest photos for their collection. So that's when it started dawning on me. Okay, so now this person has documented everything I've pretty much ever told them, everything I've sent them, everything I've shared. Now they're mad at me, right? That's a bad thing. And now they've posted all these pictures of me that are not good. They're humiliated. It was embarrassing. I wouldn't say humiliated, and I wasn't humiliated until later because it just got uglier and uglier. This is the beginning. This is when things started to turn with this individual. And I said, I don't want to work with you anymore. Leave me alone. Stay out of my life. Take it down. And that's when things got more intense with this person. And I tried nixing them.
Did you confront this French person about how they got the photos?
I did, but I didn't get into it. She was saying, no, that wasn't me. I didn't share these pictures. I mean, she, of course, denied it. And at first was very like, oh, I'm hurt. You're not being very nice to me. But then when I just was like, I'm done. Like, okay, no more conversation, no more contact with this person. I mean, there's nothing to discuss. That's when she was getting mad. So then all of a sudden she's contacting people, saying bad things and angry. Oh, Francesca, such this and that. So it was like, okay, she's upset. She'll get over it. This is what I'm thinking. But then it started being like, oh, now I'm going to release photos that I've acquired through pretending to be her. And I'm going to do it in a way that is meant to humiliate her, harass her, make it impossible for her to move on with her life. At that point, I quit modeling. I was done. I was like, I don't want to have anything to do with any of it anymore. And I don't want anyone creating any pages for me. And it almost like she wanted me to keep new content. She wanted me to keep going. I said no. And so she wanted to keep my modeling, I think, alive by reposting and regurgitating this content that should have never been released in the first place.
So you essentially quit modeling because of this person.
Oh yeah. It was the final straw. And that was it. I was just tired of it. I was tired of everything that was negative, which should have been a positive thing. It turned very sour.
After you gave up modeling, when did your photos start to resurface through other channels into your life?
Okay, so after I quit the modeling, I had also, during most of my modeling career, I was single and I was happy to be. I was traveling a lot, but I did want to kind of settle down. I wanted to be done with it. So I started dating my now husband, but he was my boyfriend kind of at the time. And that, because she was contacting people I knew and asking so many questions, she knew, oh, she has a boyfriend. What's his name? And that's when she started messaging him through then Facebook at this point. So we're talking, this would be 2010 is when she was starting to do that. And then I remember her trying to, you know, just kind of disrupt things. And that's when also she started taking photos and creating banners of calling me an escort and would create a banner, you know, like a kind of an escort type advertisement, but with my face on there, you know, this risky picture I took, and then send it to my friends. She'd go through my Facebook list. And a lot of times she did target men. And they'd be like, hey, Francesca, just heads up. This person's kind of weird, but they sent me this. And I just was, ugh, it still just makes me sick. It still turns my stomach. And it was just, they enjoyed humiliating me. But from them directly, I heard nothing. They never contacted me and said anything. They was always going around me to keep it, to shake things up.
What types of things was she saying to your boyfriend at the time?
So she was saying she knew things about me and had photos of me that she wanted to share with him. But in exchange, she wanted photos of me and ideally photos that were very explicit because, of course, she assumed my boyfriend would have photos of my privates and just completely. Because a lot of my pictures prior were glamour and implied nude. So that, and I, that was kind of the line I was walking with that time. But then there would be pictures that were coming out, of course, where, you know, my top was exposed, but I made a point to never have down there exposed. I didn't want that. And so, she really was just tell me these pictures. And so he talked to her for a bit. Of course, there were no pictures. He didn't share anything. There weren't any. He wanted to know kind of like more about this person. And we talked about it, but then he's like, I'm not talking to her anymore. And that made her even mad too, because she'd flirt with him and she flirted a lot to kind of get information from people about me. You know, very complimentary, very cute was kind of the tone of her emails and messages.
At this point, what did you think you were dealing with regarding this person?
So initially, up until that point that I just shared with her contacting my boyfriend at the time and I'd quit modeling, initially I thought, okay, she's angry. She's got some unflattering pictures. You know, I'm not happy about any of this, but I had concerns, but I was still living my life and trying to move on with my life. So I wasn't too taking it as seriously as I should have until my Facebook page, which Facebook was not good about taking the page down. So this page is still there. I go through and I'm messaging every single person, family and friend, who is a fan of this page and supporting Francesca. I say, hey, I've got this person. They're not who they say they are. It's very weird. Can you please unfollow the page and block this person? And I just went one at a time going through this. So people, 98% of them agreed. Whoever didn't do it, I just deleted and blocked that person because I didn't want any ties. I wanted full severed ties. But my husband, my now husband, my boyfriend at the time, he calls me. I will never forget it. I'm pumping gas. He's like, have you seen your Facebook page? I purposely never looked. I didn't want to see it. And I get on Facebook. Oh my gosh, it still makes me sick. There I am it was a full frontal nude photo that I'd submitted to Playboy that no one had copies of. I didn't share it. How am I looking at this? Friends and family are seeing this picture of me. And I'm here trying to report this picture. I'm shaking. I'm upset. I'm sick about it. And I don't even know what to do. My husband's like, I already reported it. I'm sorry, my boyfriend at the time, he's like, I already reported it. He's like, I can't believe this. Where was this picture from? So then I'm explaining to him this was taken 4 years ago for a Playboy submission. There's only one photographer who I really had worked with for a long time that I trusted. There's no way this picture could be out in front of where my dad can see this. And I call the police and I'm crying. And the officer was nice, but he said, well, so who is this person? Who is this person? Who is this person that I've been talking to? Are they in the United States? What is their name? Are they male or female? And you know how stupid I felt talking to this officer? And I don't know. And he's like, I'm sorry. You need to find, he's like, you might be better off hiring like an investigator. You need to talk to an attorney. But he's like, there's nothing we can do. And here I am just counting the seconds for that picture to be removed. And then of course, so then later, so the photographer had a swimwear shop, the one that, so I had worked with him for years since I started my career. Okay. In 2005, he was like one of the first photographers I worked with and he became a friend of mine. And I worked with him and promoted his bikinis and his, business that he had. He was well known in the area and local small business. And I remember going into his shop and shortly after that, and he knew I had a couple weird fans. And he's like, Francesca, he's like, I don't know how that picture got out there. And I said, you were the only one that took it. Like, I did not share that. Not with a boy. No one. I was honestly, it was something I kind of like submitted and put under the rug. I didn't want my then boyfriend to know about any of it. I was done with all of it. So here for it to come back after I'm trying to clean up that mess with everything and my modeling, just put it behind me. It just, this person, they were just having a great time and they were torturing. It was torment. Like it was horrible.
Did you believe him when he said that he didn't know how the photo got out?
I did. He seemed very concerned and he seemed upset and he just couldn't believe it. He's like, I don't understand. He's like, I don't know if my, cause he worked with a ton of models. He had tons, thousands of photos of me for the years of us working together. And he had all these drives and he's like, there's no way I never shared it. There's no way that could have happened.
What are some of the next incidents that happened after that?
So Facebook didn't really help me out. The page was taken down only for it to come up later. So they would create pages with different names and the pages would pop back up. They would create now with Instagram. So things were kind of transitioning here. So I ended up having our daughter in 2013. And so to answer your question, things kind of bubbled up, right? The photo, fake Facebook profiles, contacting friends. So that was all going on. And then it kind of died down a little bit. So I had my baby, our baby, And then, but during this time there were, so French Girl did, kind of phased out, disappeared. I really stopped hearing from her. However, there was another person that I had been talking to, Dan, who was a fan of my work. He said he found me through John, the photographer whose swimsuit shop I worked for. And it would always be usually via email, but sometimes Facebook. And he really always came off as a friend, super professional, proper grammar, you know, capitalization, basic stuff. I'm just very nice. And I kept in touch with him over the years. So my husband would find things in forums online, pornographic type sites, modeling, but they're like nude modeling type sites. And it would be where people can just share pictures. They can share pictures. They can say whatever they want. And so it was popping up in a number of these sites, just terrible things about me, horrible things. And then about my life too, you know, and here I'm trying to move on. And this is still going on. 2014, 2015, 2016, I'm getting married. They're commenting in these forums, sharing these old photos from when I was like 21, saying, oh, she's getting married. And then they tell all the information they can and share it. And that was what was going on. And it would bubble up. I'd cry. My husband would be like, oh my gosh, this person just won't stop. They won't stop. And then it would kind of calm down. Nothing would happen. I wouldn't hear. And I kind of turned the other way for a little bit as a coping mechanism, I guess. I didn't want to deal with it. But then in 2020 is when it got very intense. I will say prior to 2020, though, I knew that Don, one of a photographer I'd worked with, he was, I found out, sharing pictures of me, you know, selling them. He wasn't just sharing them. He was selling them to people and making and having them say, okay, I'm not going to show this video. I'm not going to share these pictures, right? Because it would defeat the purpose of him charging people. So he'd say, hey, you can't share them, but it's for your own private collection, right? Everybody has this private collection he'd sell to, real weirdos. So I found out that he was videotaping the photo shoots. So he'd have this little camera going and I'd be changing, or maybe I'd turn a certain way because I was doing like applied, right? So it'd be very sexy, but I didn't want any like really showing, not overtly, not explicitly showing. And he would have this video running and sold it to my stalker, and my stalker would splice it up and have stills. So I would have this look like I'm taking direction. And then there would be my privates, you know, or just me changing. Okay, I'm going to change this different top. He just sold it. And then this person turned around and just used it against me as I'm getting married, as I'm having kids, as I'm starting a business. It just never stopped.
At what point did you start looking for lawyers? Did you take those next steps and find Joey Ortega? And how did you find him?
Okay. Yes. So 2020, things got pretty bad. And what really got a fire under our butts was my husband had run across a thread of somebody who appeared to live in our neighborhood that said, oh my goodness, what a great find. I actually live in the same neighborhood as this girl. I live a few houses down and we're looking, my husband's like, I hope this isn't true, but it sure appeared that way because people, the conversation, it was concerning. And we lived in a new development, pretty cozy. Newer developments tend to be a little closer. And all of a sudden we just felt such high visibility, and which can be a good thing or a bad thing, I guess, is like you see people coming into the neighborhood, you know, do you recognize that car, right? But everyone's in each other's business. So that really rattled me. Here I was pregnant with our second daughter. It was the fall of 2020. And we see this thread saying, hey, I live in the neighborhood with this girl, among all these people who are still talking about me years later. And so my husband's like, we need to do something. And here I am just in tears. I'm stressed out. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. What do I do? I don't know. And he was like, we need to hire like an investigator. And so we hired an investigative team. It was a small business, small team. And they didn't really do anything. They didn't tell me anything I couldn't look up myself. It was fruitless and very discouraging. I will say prior, around that time, so I hired them and my husband had reached out to our friend, Dan, that longtime supporter, him and his wife. And he reached out via Facebook and said, hey, we've hired a private investigator to find out who the stalker is. So what we thought was weird, Dan had always been super nice, professional, and he sends this message and it said, "Go Seahawks." And it was a picture of me in a G-string, a black G-string with a Seahawks jersey on. And it was taken in 2006. I mean, it's old. And he said, LOL. And my husband showed it to me. He's like, "Look what Dan sent me on Facebook." And I was like, "Huh, that's weird." And he's like, "Yeah." And we thought, okay, maybe he's, you know, maybe I guess his way of being nice. It was kind of offensive, but we're like, okay. Then we get a strange message from Dan saying, "My account's been hacked. I'm going to take a while off of Facebook." So he disappears for, I don't know, a month. And he comes back on. And next time Dan comes back on his Facebook, he's messaging my husband. And he's a whole different person. He is aggressive in his tone. He's perverse in language. My husband's like, "Wait a minute." I mean, it was like one of those scenes from a movie where it's all starting to click, where you're like, "Holy smokes, this person's acting totally different than what I've known in the last 10 years of any communication with them." Not to mention that same person, Dan, is also friends with the photographer who took this Playboy submission, who I had trusted and who I worked with and for since 2006. So my husband thought, we were like, okay. Then I think more stuff, of course, this is all while things are online, you know, threads are humiliating. And it's just, I just continued to go on. And I remember I was just upset. I'm crying. I feel hopeless. I'm disgusted. And I, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to live the rest of my life like this. And I was on Facebook and I was like, what about like a Facebook stalking group? Like, I needed support. No one understood. Even my husband, who tries to understand, he didn't even understand like what the turmoil. And so I was on there, and that's kind of how I connected with Joey. He had helped somebody else out on there, and he contacted me through this person. And from there, he was able to start really getting some information and answers that I was unable to piece together myself.
I'm pretty sure all our listeners know how much I love to travel, especially if they've looked at my Instagram. My goal is literally to travel the entire world, and I've already seen quite a bit of it.
That's for sure. Half the time I'm wondering what time zone you're in.
And that's why we're going to tell you about Away Luggage, because having the right luggage when you're traveling is so important. Half the time I'm running to catch a flight or dragging my suitcase into a new hotel, or the airplane guys are tossing it on the plane or even dropping it. My luggage has to withstand so much when I travel.
Well, luckily, all of Away's suitcases are built to last. They have really durable exteriors that can withstand those rough baggage handlers and you running through the airport.
My favorite part of Away is the organization system that's all built in. On my trip to Mexico last week, I mostly packed a bunch of bikinis and a couple small outfits. But while I was there, I did a ton of shopping, and Away made packing it all back in to get home a total breeze. It has a built-in compression pad that really worked, and I can't believe how much stuff I was able to bring home.
You know I like to stay organized. I also like to stay safe and keep all my things safe when I travel. So I really appreciate the TSA-approved combination lock. It's easy to use and it works.
Not to mention the 360 spinner wheels. The smooth roll on those wheels has gotten me through some airport obstacles for sure.
Oh, and they don't just make suitcases. They have a whole range of travel essentials to choose from.
And best of all, they have the coolest colors, like metallic, pink, purple, blue. I chose asphalt because I wanted something dark and sleek, but not typical black.
Choosing Away Luggage is a no-brainer because there's a 100-day trial on everything Away makes. So you can take it out on the road, live with it, use it, and travel with it for 100 days. If you decide it's not for you, then you can return any non-personalized item for a full refund during that period. No small print.
Oh, I'm definitely keeping mine. Away also offers free shipping and returns on any order within the contiguous U.S., Europe, Canada, and Australia.
Start your 100-day trial and shop the entire Away lineup of travel essentials, including their best-selling suitcases at awaytravel.com/stalking.
That's awaytravel.com/stalking. Check it out today. And Joey, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
Joey, how did you get into becoming a cyber stalking expert?
I started out investigating when I was 18. And I went to my first PI that I apprenticed under. I actually found him when I was 16. And I said, I want to be a detective. I think I'd be a good detective. And He's like, well, how old are you? And I'm like, 16. He's like, well, come back when you're 18. And 2 years later, I was 18. I went back to his office. I said, okay, I'm ready. And he was impressed. And so he took me on. And so I started working for him, doing surveillances and things like doing things like insurance fraud. Actually, my first case, I ended up like saving the company from a $2 million lawsuit that this lady was saying she was hurt at work and was bedstricken. And I got video of her like cleaning out her car. And then first she'd pulling out trash from her car, pulling out bags from her car. And then she reached in and then she pulled out her entire back seat from her car. I started working for other detectives too. And around this time, that's when, the cyber, boom happened, started to happen. And people were starting, email was kind of a new thing. People were on eBay. And that's when a lot of the fraud started happening. And I found I was able to get especially with eBay fraudsters, I would be asked to help out with a lot of those. And I found I was able to sort of use kind of basic human profiling, understanding human behavior, kind of their laziness and their default behavior, along with linguistics and stuff, where I was able to identify the true identities of these people. And so and then that's when PI Magazine wrote an article asking about my technique and how I was able to do that. And then that's when I was getting more calls from my bosses and stuff to help out with people were saying that they were getting emails they couldn't trace or couldn't figure out who was harassing them. And so that's when I just started developing the specialty in that area.
Can you walk us through your first consultation with Francesca?
Usually it's very casual. I want them to feel comfortable. I usually try to get them to at some point be willing to talk to me on the phone. And then maybe even video chat. I want them to know my voice. I want them to see my face. I want them to know right away that I am who I say I am. Because by the time people come to me, they've usually been traumatized. They've been ripped off. They've been ignored by police, ripped off by every fake private investigator around them, and then as well as the scammers and interfering investigations. I wanted them to see I am who I say I am and I'm on your side. And so it was really just a get to know you, listening to her. I let them know, I believe you. And what happened to you was wrong, and this isn't your fault. Even whatever you did or didn't do, whether regarding due diligence with the photographers and stuff, at the end of the day, you were a victim of somebody who should have known better. And they chose to do this to you. This was a violation on their part. I am not here to judge you. I will never judge you. I will never mock you, scold you, or ridicule you. And that's important that you know that and that you know that I'm still on your side because it's important that you trust me. When we talk from now on, I need you to see me as your shrink or your priest, if you will. And I need you to be open to me about everything that you've done. Because usually one of the first things I'll ask for is I'll need them to sit down and just go over every relationship they've been through in a certain based on each case, I'll determine, okay, this is probably somebody they've encountered within the past 5 years or maybe even the past 10 years based on certain details. And so I'll ask them to, I go, you just sit down and and I want you to even talk to me about mention if they were just a one-time hookup or maybe some explicit conversations on chat that never went anywhere. I need to know everything. It's in those intimate moments that are shared with me that certain things will come out, details, certain expressions that are used, tendencies, correspondences that they saved that turn out later to maybe link to pieces of what seemed an obscure piece of digital evidence on a forum. And I'm able to make those connections. That's where the intelligence aspect comes in. Even if it's some little piece of thing that you think is probably nothing, I don't let me be the judge of that. I don't care if I'm very literal, but I go, I don't care if after we talk and or maybe a week later in our case, you wake up at 3:30 in the morning and something just comes to mind, as often does happen, And I said, call me, text me. I don't care. Call me. I want that piece of data because it's always that one little bit that later on will help you create that one link to a bunch of other separated pieces. And that's where you find your trend. It's important because and something I even trained investigators when I was teaching at college and universities to future cops who were getting their post credits and stuff. I would explain that, you have your evidence and you're going to follow your leads, but sometimes those go dry. And so that's when the intelligence comes in. That's where you just start pulling in all the seemingly related and unrelated data. And when you pull them all together, you can find new trends that somehow echo something that related to your case. And now you just created a new lead in a case where you said you were dry of leads. And that's where intelligence plays. And that's in a case like stalking, that's really got to be the bread and butter of a case.
Francesca, when you first met Joey and connected with him, what were your first impressions of him and what was the deciding factors to hire him to help you with this?
His enthusiasm and just diving in. We talked. I mean, it was so overwhelming, even me telling him, because of the span of time and how many different characters that were kind of a part of this big picture. And there's a lot of them even left out now that Joey knows that were like on our suspect list. But he just started diving in, asking questions. He didn't let my overwhelmment get in his way. And one thing I will say that was really cool with working with Joey is I was also active with it. We would both get on, you know, different programs he had sent me so we could start going through the details. And I was an active participant in it. I wasn't like, hey, this is my issue. I'll talk to you when you get it solved. It was an ongoing investigation, which is really what led to the break in the case.
What was that break in the case? How did you find out who was stalking you and all these details?
I think one of the biggest help was when I was able to talk with Amber. And you know, she was, you know, understandably reluctant to kind of talk too much about it, because at this point, her experience with this French girl, they used the alias Aurelia, had already passed. The drama was past. The semi-damage she had done to her career was kind of pretty much repaired. But I explained to her, you know, it was really important. I think, you know, it's only a matter of time before this person considers fixating on you. And in fact, they might already still be around you, just under a different identity. And, you know, and so once we, you know, built enough rapport and trust, she opened up. One of my MOs is I ask people just basically, again, because of the pre-speech, I say, I need to look at everything. And so I usually ask people to give me their complete access to their Facebook accounts. I'll pull a forensic data, basically like a forensic copy of their entire account, and download it and analyze it. I'll ask for their email addresses and the passwords, and I'll go through all of that and then just start developing my leads. And it was there where I was able to find, so with this Aurelia person, she was a French person, but I also found out that there was this weird shady guy that Francesca had some weird contact with who went by the name Pierrick. And that was the French guy. And I'm like, well, that can't be coincidence. And so I saw that when I was able to get into Amber's emails and her Facebook, she was having similar arguments with Aurelia that Francesca was having towards the end of their relationship, which was, you know, why are you contacting my old photographers? Why are you asking for these pictures? Basically, what Aurelia was doing in both cases is that she was making friends with these guys, using her position as a sort of pseudo representative of the models for their social media as a context to get the pictures. And they would usually give like some tame stuff, but then she would eventually seduce them. She would engage them to like kind of getting more explicit in the conversation. Some of them were engaging in cyber sex with her. And that's where some of them were either out of fear of retaliation or because they thought now they were falling for this pretty French girl. They were handing over like the stuff they weren't supposed to hand over in both cases, in Amber's case and in Francesca's case. And in those arguments where she would make the same claims as she did with Francesca, saying, no, it's not me. It was somebody who's pretending to be me and they're trying to hurt my career. Amber was great about asking her to like be very detailed and to write down notes about who she was talking to and what was said so she can figure out how to fix all this. And that was great because Aurelia was turning over Word docs and everything. I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I'm seeing them in the emails. I'm downloading them and I just start parsing out the metadata on these Word docs. And Word docs are like one of the worst documents to use. Like there's a reason why attorneys don't use Word. They use like, I think they use like, there's another one they use, actually, because I use it too for some of them more confidential stuff. But Word Perfect is much more secure. The thing with Word, the Microsoft Word, is there's so much metadata. Like if with the right software and stuff, you could even find stuff where like they wrote something and they said, no, I don't want to write that. And then like you deleted it and then wrote something new. And in this case, I found multiple documents where it showed the owner as Pierrick. And so, and I knew this Pierrick was a real person because then at this point, that's when I suspected that one of her photographers, Conrad, was selling pictures because some of the pictures that I was getting from these sex forum site where I was pretending to be a fellow pervert and getting people to like, I asked Francesca to give me some pictures that were unreleased, but not too explicit, but enough to imply that I have a whole collection. So I get these guys to send me their proof before I send them my, because it was just weird. It was almost like a contest.
Francesca, when you found out about these pussy pics that people were looking for, was this something that you had ever posed for that you knew about that you thought even existed?
I did not. So I knew I had taken my first picture for the Playboy submission, and then I had done another Playboy photo shoot more glamorized where down there was exposed. I believed both of those photo shoots to be completely private and not in any way distributed. Other than that, no, I was like, there should be no other photo and certainly nothing with legs open or blatant showing of my privates.
Everybody said, who's going to be the one to get the pussy pic? We want to get the pussy pic up and that on this forum. And there was one guy who was very, he had a lot of stuff, but would never put up the pussy pic, you know, but he would say he'd have it. And he would put, and he was starting, he was kind of putting some stuff out that would point to a possible photographer. And that person who he used the moniker Master of Cumshot, I started engaging in private conversations with him and using the bait pictures that Francesca gave me. And I was able to identify when I told him, when I was asking him to give me some proof that he has some stuff, something that's not been on the forum and stuff. He eventually sent me pieces of videotape that was made by a different guy, another photographer and past, I guess, roommate of Francesca. And that guy was, and she already had a restraining order against that guy years prior. And so I knew, okay, so I figured, okay, Master of Cumshot is probably this guy. And that's what, that's the ultimate thing is that ultimately it wasn't 20 years of being in stock by one guy. It turned out to be basically about three or four stalkers. And at some point they were intersecting at multiple occasions, which what I made the digital data a little messy at first. And so I had to identify each of them. So I'm like, okay, so I know who you are. And then, but one of the, he eventually, I did eventually get him to send me the pussy pic. And that picture turned out to be very exclusive from this Don guy. He was the only one that could have. And so, and I realized the pictures Pierrick was mentioning in his interactions with other people, they were also pictures that were clearly coming from Don. I coached Francesca on some ways to approach Don, basically, you know, saying, you know, be vulnerable at this point. This guy has a lot of, you know, machismo, ego thing. Give him a chance to almost play the hero. Say you think that there's this French guy who might be, you know, using some stuff, and but we don't know if she's a real guy. But, you know, basically make it all about Pierrick. And it worked. Then Don suddenly said, oh, you know, actually, I think I might have sold something to him. Now they're thinking, I look back at my records. And so that's when she got me on a three-way call with him. And that's when he... I got him to admit he was selling Pierrick all these pictures as well as a videotape, which was unauthorized. And that's, I think, when I started getting more, asking more questions about that, I think Don realized, oh my gosh, I just admitted to some shit that I shouldn't have admitted to. So now I had that. Okay, so I got, okay, Aurelia is Pierrick in France, who's terrorizing Francesca through these, when they got rejected, were putting out these things on these forums to basically shame them. And they did the same thing to Amber to a certain degree, but Francesca, they hit the hardest. And I think part of that was because they seem to have been more attached to Francesca, I think, and they worked the longest with them. And so I had that. And then I realized, okay, now then, and this Master of Cumshot is, I'm pretty sure is this Michael guy. I'll just stick with first names. The pictures he had were, and the videos, the pictures he showed me turned out to be video stills. And they were video stills that only he had. And I knew that because I also had, I told Francesca to start digging up old devices and everything else. And she sent me like old broken computers and stuff, and a couple of computers and phones. And I was able to recover data and to show that it was stuff that Michael produced. And even when they were living together, and they were like sharing a computer almost. And And so, okay, so I'm like, so that's where a lot of these pictures come from. But it turned out these people were converging on these like forums and basically trying to basically say they're the better stalker, but the trophy is the one who could get the pussy pic. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but that is the reality. And that was the conversation I had to throw myself in the middle of and to convince that I was much more informed and much more and had much more pictures. And I had to find a way to use that to Francesca's advantage to basically make the picture, all those pictures go away by make it seem like I have more to put out. So once I was able to get all the information, that all started to come together really within the same two-week process. And then I realized when I questioned some of these photographers, like I said, I went back and talked to photographers in both Amber's case and in Francesca's case. And some when these photographers were admitting that they maybe had released stuff on certain sites, you know, to impress each other or stuff. One in particular, I guess the one who had his bikini business that Francesca was supporting, he allowed me to go through his Facebook, and he was pretty candid too, that maybe he was a bit too giving. But he said, in his case, I expected to find more stuff with Auralia and that it was going to be the same situation. But in this case, it wasn't. It turned out he was developing a close friendship with this Dan guy who I already was on my radar because I thought I read the past emails. I'm like, this guy's incredibly obsequious, too obsequious in this case. And I feel like he's trying to play to your ego to kind of let down your guard, and that on some level it might have worked because you're a trusting person, which, again, I try to let people know that that's just what it is. I don't think it's something she should regret being trusting. She has an amazing and beautiful nature, and stalkers shouldn't be able to take that away from people. But that's when I really started to hone in on Dan. So I asked her I'm like, we need to go through your emails, dig up old emails of him. And so I need to start comparing. And so I started comparing the linguistics, the syntax, terms used, IP, digital data. And then I started comparing that with these emails that were going to her husband, where they were basically screwing with him, basically saying, look at these pictures I got of your wife, you know, and basically trying to emasculate him. I started to hone in on that. I started comparing sort of the, yeah, he was talking differently, but even when people talk differently, they talk the same in a way. I mean, it's just compulsive. Like the way certain people, like syntax quirks of some form, expressions used, even how they write, you know, like maybe how they punctuate things. It's all like can come up to a pretty powerful fingerprint. Maybe not necessarily something you use in court, but it's something that I could use to elicit confessions. I started to really think, okay, I think there's more to this guy. And I also realized when Francesca mentioned where he kind of disappeared for a while and said, you know, I've been hacked and all that stuff. That was the same time that Auralia started to disappear herself. And so I'm thinking there's got to be connections with these people too. And again, that's when I realized, okay, it's at least three different stalkers and somewhere there's an intersect. Where's the intersect? So I was able to figure out where Michael was intersecting with Pierrick. When I walked her through how to kind of help get Conrad to open up before he would be onto us, that we are gathering evidence against him as well, he shared with me the Pierre's name, his address, and everything else, order forms. And then he said, he told me something. He said, well, also, you know, I gave Pierrick like these contact sheets, sort of like almost like a catalog, like what shoot is it you're wanting copies of? And one of the shoots that Don Conrad shared was one that was very exclusive. And Pierre said, well, I already have that one. And I think proved it. Well, I already have that one. I don't need that one. And so I'm like, that's interesting. And so it turned out when I was looking back then at past conversations with Don Conrad and Francesca, there was these occasions where like Don was asking Francesca to do this emergency shoot. It was for some good money. Somebody's paying like a lot of money for it. Francesca didn't ask too many questions. She just trusted him. It was for something. And it turned out Dan was paying Don Conrad. That picture that Pierrick had were these exclusive photo shoots that Dan had paid for and only Dan would have had. But somehow Pierrick has it too now. And so some of those pictures were showing up in these forums where these guys were trying to outshine each other with what pictures they have of Francesca. And so I realized, okay, And that's where I found most of the intersections. There was like three different forums, but one in particular where they were mostly having this competition. And that was the connection with Dan Young, and realized that also Conrad was complicit in helping Dan Young basically stalk a model by paying for Don Conrad to act as a proxy by taking these pictures.
So there are three different stalkers that all randomly found each other on a type of porn forum. Is this something that you've seen happen before?
This was a new one for me. These different people were all obsessing over her in their own way, and in some way competing with each other in their own perverse way. And all of them clearly had fantasies of a relationship with Francesca, but would never happen. And so that was new to me. But I realized, okay, this makes sense now, Francesca. You're dealing with multiple stalkers. And so I have to parse out all this evidence and make sure it goes to the right person. And then, but now we're making all the connections and we understand it. So now we can start building this timeline.
Francesca, when you found out that it wasn't just one stalker, it was three different stalkers. When you found all this out, what was going through your mind?
I felt that I couldn't trust anybody. I was like, is it a photographer? Is it a friend? Is it somebody I considered a friend 10 years ago? Who did I piss off that has it out for me and is helping these people, knowingly giving them all the information, anything good and bad about me? So yeah, just a lot of distrust and overwhelming. Again, it was just discouraging. I felt very alone.
Joey, once you had this information, what were your next steps on getting some sort of justice for Francesca?
I had to prioritize in terms of where to focus most of my efforts. Basically, it's going after one scumbag at a time. I don't need to try to get to them all at once. That's crap that only happens on TV shows, you know? So what I honed in first was like, I want to know for sure, who are these people messing with your husband? What bothered me is that he was hell-bent on being very trying to emasculate him and clearly trying to draw a clear wedge. It wasn't just a game. And when somebody like that is trying to accomplish something that real, it usually implies that they plan to move in for something offline. They're trying to isolate – that the real stalkers, the scary ones, are the ones who try to isolate their victims ultimately. And this one seemed like trying to go out of their way to isolate Francesca, to make an opening for them. And so I wanted to focus on that. And so I suspected it might have been this Dan guy, since he was also sending messages with his real name, but then later on would claim he was hacked. I said, okay, I need to stop talking to him. But before you do, I need you to basically tell him how pissed you are about your wife, you know. Just be very bitter, sound drunk, whatever. Say like, you know, because of the stalking crap, you know, she doesn't even excuse the term. I'm just saying it as it was said then to understand my approach. Say like be rude. Just say the bitch isn't putting out anymore, you know, all this. And it's just, you know, and get him to start talking explicit with you and maybe talking porn shop with you. But then tell him that you got to take this offline because you don't want your wife to see all this stuff on, because she looks at the Facebook sometimes. And so I created a fake email address and I said, tell him this is your email address. And then he did. And then that's when I took over the conversation and pretended to be her husband for a couple of weeks and started just drawing out details and information that I knew lined up with Dan. And I realized, and I had to prove that this was the real Dan, not someone, so that, because I knew Dan was going to continue pushing the I was being hacked thing.
So at this point, you know, you're navigating through this world and sort of piecing the puzzle together.
Right.
So when you got those elements together, can you tell us getting to court and what that meant to Francesca?
Right. So what led me, I mean, it was always going to go to court, but I already said, I felt like this one was being very too aggressive and that this is the one that most likely to escalate soonest and most dangerously. So I said, I want to focus on getting this person, taking this person down first. I was also doing deep background on Dan, and turned out like one of the first real, even I think prior to MySpace, the first groups dedicated to like kind of getting nude pictures of Francesca was this obscure Yahoo group. And I suspected it might be Dan. The signatures seemed similar. And so I brought that up in my conversations and got him to say things to confirm. Okay, so now he's admitted he ran the Yahoo group. And then I contacted Eugenia Swimwear explained to them situation, got them. They were a little apprehensive, but when they saw that I was who I said I was and they realized it was Francesca. And, you know, Francesca and Amber were in that Eugenia bikini jam in 2006. It was televised nationally. And they were, of all the models there, it was that show was focused, that televised show at least, was focused on them too. It was always back and forth between them and going into their lives. They were the most featured. And I felt like, I think if I could draw a connection showing that Dan's been at this for a while, that this obsession's been building, I got them to go through their records. And we were able to find that in 2006 that Dan had mail ordered a videotape of that bikini jam. And I was able to confirm his address and everything else. I needed to be able to prove to the court that this wasn't a one-time thing and that it was him and that this is something that has been building over time, including that time span where all this harassment was happening, so I could adequately connect him to all the other stuff, even with the stuff that the other stalkers are doing, and to prove that his actions strongly contributed to this. What made him most dangerous was in his bravado. He started showing me videotapes because, again, to show me how exclusive he had. And he showed me videotapes of a car driving by Francesca's house on multiple occasions. And I said, okay, so this is clear escalation. He claimed that it was video sent to him from someone in the old Yahoo group. But now that he knows Francesca's in trouble, he's showing me this so that I could protect my wife. Because, again, he thinks he's talking to her husband and he wants to help. And I said, well, can you get me the name of that guy? And we need to know. I mean, clearly this is a real danger. I mean, at the time, I mean, nobody didn't know at the time, but, you know, they had their daughter, but Francesca was at the, you know, the later stage of a pregnancy and about to have her baby. And it was just a lot to be scared about. And we kind of kept that part under wraps at the time. And so that's when he said, well, I want to help you, but look, I know this sounds weird, but I know I've been a fan of Francesca for 20 years. So again, another admission I could take that lined up with the evidence I had with Eugenia Jam showing a 20-year obsession. I'm like, great, thank you. And my goal is always, I just want at least one pussy pic of her, you know? And if you could just give me that. And he felt free to ask her husband that because at this point, he was convinced that her husband was sexually frustrated and resented his wife for withholding sex from him. It was a whole made-up narrative, but I knew it was one that Dan would admit to because I profiled him as being very sexually frustrated. And so I knew it would open him up. And so it did. And so he was bold enough to ask him for this stuff. And I said, well, I can't just give you that stuff. But why don't you just give me that stuff? He's like, I know I'm being kind of a naughty boy here, but it's the only thing I got. And this is my only chance to get it. It's just been my life dream. And I'm like, well, I'll send you that. But, you know, you need to give me more information. And so I would slowly ask him for more proof. But eventually I baited him into sending me like the whole videos on both, and they're somewhat long. And that was where I was able to start doing the OSINT work again. And so I basically looked at every frame, everything that the camera passed, and I was able to see the kind of car he was driving based on the steering wheel, the columns, and everything else. I did his asset search and found out the number of cars he owned, and the car he owned matched up with the car that was being driven. And that's when I said, okay, we got to get this guy off the street. And so I called the FBI and I called the local police and I told them, look, you need to take this seriously. Here's what I have. And I've called the FBI because now this is interstate because this guy's out of California. The people I did talk to there clearly saw that, yeah, this is real. This is not just some freak. This is clear escalation and there's a real danger. And so I said, yeah, so I'm going to get the restraining order going. And that's when I started putting everything together I described to you, put it together, digital data, and created that 60-page layout for her to take to the court to get the restraining order and to prove without a doubt that it is him. And I made sure the language was such so that they would not only give him a restraining order, but that the local police then confiscated all of his, found out he had a cache of weapons, and they confiscated all of that.
And Francesca, did you think at any point in time that your life was actually in danger?
I did in 2020 when things kind of hit that peak, when I had seen the video of someone driving by our home, a vehicle registered to him, knowing he lives in California, knowing I've never met him. He doesn't have business in Washington. And he's driving through our neighborhood, recording our home, sending it to my husband. I, at that point, thought he was in our front yard. And every time after that, being outside, I didn't want to wash my car. I didn't want to go check the mail when we got home from school, picking up my daughter. let's get in the house. I didn't want to be seen. And so that was also, you know, when we talked about moving this year and selling our house, I mean, it was a huge, it played a huge role in that decision. And we don't regret it. We're really happy not being there and knowing that he knows, not to mention what information's being exchanged in the forums as well. So yes, at that point, I took it very seriously. And I had anxiety at night. And I would sometimes reach out to Joey. I remember we had a security system that we had installed. We installed videos around our house, or video cameras around our house. We did everything we could at that time, given I was about to have a baby any day. And here I'm going through court stuff, knowing that Dan is mad. He's angry now that he's been, you know, caught. Joey called him out. And so we were moving forward on that. And just a lot was happening. But yeah, I mean, I had trouble sleeping at night. And so did my husband.
When you started to put all this information together and you finally got to court, what was that experience like?
Francesca needed to be there and stand up and testify on her own. But I mean, I was always a phone call away. I was, you know, she'd call me and say, what should I say? I would motivate her and prepare her and coach her, say, here's what you're going to say. Here's, you know, this is the time where you're not emotional. You just give just the facts, give the clear connection. I told her how to explain evidence in a way so that the judge sees a clear explanation. And don't, this is not the, I mean, show the clear impact of the terror and trauma, but don't be the overly emotional and where you're not getting the story out. Give them both the focused woman and the reasonably scared victim. And she was brilliant at it.
Eventually, we were successful in serving him, finally. So I had to keep going to court. And I thought, is today the day I'm going to see him there? And also, he, because he was obsessed and had come up to Washington, I wondered, is he going to walk through the door? Is he going to be in the courtroom? Is he in Washington State? Or is he going to be on a Zoom call because of his location? But the anxiety every time that build up to the court date. But he showed up on the Zoom call, and it's crazy because in my head, everything I'm going to tell the judge, all this stuff. And then I get there and I didn't want to, for one, really look at the screen. I didn't want to look at him. But for two, I didn't really have to say a lot because ironically, he's there talking to the judge and the judge is listening. He's burying himself. The way he was communicating and his inconsistencies, I barely had to say anything. And I think the judge, after reading what we had documented and submitted to the court and talking to this man on the Zoom, there was nothing more to be said. And so I was very happy and grateful that the 2-year protective order was granted, as well as confiscating, you know, firearms.
And as we know, a lot of times going to court, getting the restraining order, it's a piece of paper, and that can enrage the stalker. That can push things to escalate. Were you worried about that?
I was, given in the past that he said, don't make me angry. He is typing that out, sending that to my husband. Joey has that documented. So when he's saying that, and he did get mad, you know, and his tone would shift. And so, yeah, I absolutely was scared of how is he going to react? And he still knows where we live. So what kind of preventative measures can we take? And at that point, that's when I got I already had a revolver that I did not keep with me. And I did bring that back to the house. After the protective order was granted, I did start reaching out to attorneys looking for assistance, kind of just holding that photographer accountable, as well as my stalker for the damage he had done. The photographer, I did go to the police about that. And there were a number of models. What really motivated me on that was there were a number of other models who had experienced very similar things. And he'd really burn those models and just use their photos and still was regurgitating that content. And he's in these slummy forums to sell them and to get money. So I kind of was like, he needs to be held accountable. Now he's blocked me from seeing any of his content, any model he's posting out of fear. But I tried reaching out to a lot of attorneys. And so I haven't had success with that. And a lot of the reason too, I was looking for somebody is because the stalking is still going on. The words and pictures are still posted every, you know, week, every other week, you know, something's coming up. So it's an ongoing job.
So even though you have one protective order against one of your stalkers, the stalking is not stopped. You have other stalkers that have developed from each other, basically. What do you think would make you feel like you've gotten justice in this case?
I want them to be exposed because they're so easily hiding behind computers and saying whatever they want, posting whatever they want. I want them, their name to be known and then be held accountable.
Francesco, why did you decide to come forward and share your story with us on Strictly Stalking?
I wanted to share my story because I want other women to know that they're not alone with this.
Joey, if somebody out there is in the same situation, first of all, what advice would you have for them? And second of all, how can people find you if they need your help?
Well, usually people find me through word of mouth or through groups. If you type in Joey or Tag Investigator, I usually come up. People find me often through LinkedIn. I do have a website now just to kind of start to bring together a lot of these requests for help. It's joeyortegaintel.com. And so that's where I do a lot of my freelance, not just stalking cases, but my intelligence work I do for overseas clients and threat assessment, counterterrorism. I feel like a real powerful step at this point, besides just going after these idiots, is to help push for laws to like have protections for models. Contractors have to have licenses. I think people who are photographing vulnerable women, like in vulnerable positions, should have to be licensed and background checked, and something that a model can check. You know, it's not an end all be all protection, but it does help whittle out some of these psychos and create new laws that say, like, just because you might have signed a release for a certain project, that doesn't give them rights in perpetuity for them to do anything they want in the future, especially things like this. There should be new laws in place that allows models to hold them accountable, not just financially, but in a case where it was outright abuse, like legally, whether through civil damages or criminal charges.
Francesca, thank you for sharing your story with us today. And Joey, thank you for sharing so much important advice.
And thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you guys so much. If anyone out there is in need of help or is a victim of stalking, please reach out. You can find a list of resources on our Instagram at Strictly Stalking Pod.
If you'd like to share your story with us on Strictly Stalking, you can reach us at strictlystalkingpod@gmail.com. That's strictlystalkingpod@gmail.com.
As a listener of Strictly Stalking, please leave a review and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, CastBox, or wherever you listen.
I'm Jake Deptula.
And I'm Jamie Beebe. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Strictly Stalking.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to this, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.